Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
There is a presence within us that knows how to speak with kindness, to listen with love, and to respond with wisdom. In unity, we understand this as the Christ within, the divine nature expressing as love, understanding, and right action. When we look at the life of Jesus Christ, we are not simply looking at a historical figure to admire. We are looking at a pattern of Christ nature to embody. Jesus Christ is our wayshower. He shows us the way, shows us how to live a loving, understanding, expansive life that brings peace, fulfillment, and healing to ourselves and others. Today I'm going to discuss how Jesus demonstrated compassion through his actions and his teachings. Jesus consistently communicated in a way that honored the dignity of every person he encountered. He spent time with the marginalized, outcasts, lepers, criminals, tax collectors, the poor, women, even the Jews' hated enemy. Jesus did not see the outer physical manifestations of any of these so-called social rejects. He saw the perfect inner divinity of them, and his compassion offered them hope and redemption. Jesus taught his followers life lessons by telling them stories. Jesus' most famous parables are the prodigal son and the good Samaritan. Both of these parables illustrate divine truths of love, inclusion, and forgiveness, all qualities of compassion. Let's start with the prodigal son. We all know the story, right? A rich man has two sons. The older son is hardworking and dedicated to the father. The younger son is adolescently selfish and wants to sow his wild oats. The younger son asks for his inheritance now, that very moment. And without argument, the father gives it to him. The younger son leaves the father's estate and spends all his inheritance on wine, women, and song, and ends up penniless and starving, being forced to work as a laborer tending pigs. A rich Jewish boy reduced to feeding filthy, disgusting pigs. The pigs were leading better lives than he was. How humiliating for him. In his misery, the younger son came to himself. He realized his transgressions toward his father, and with utter shame, returned to his father's estate to beg his father just to let him be a lowly servant. The father had been watching and hoping for the son to return. Upon seeing the son far off down the road, the father ran to the son and hugged him and kissed him. The son tried to apologize and beg to be a servant, but the father would have none of that. The father ordered his best robe be placed on the son to honor him, a ring to put on his finger to signify authority and reinstatement into the family, and sandals put on his feet to represent his status, not as a slave, but as a free son. Then the father threw a party to celebrate his son's return. The father did not shame, punish, or lecture the younger son. He only welcomed, restored, and embraced him. That's not the end of the story, though. The older son heard the party music as he walked from the field where he had worked all day long. His father greeted him and asked him to join the party to celebrate his brother's return. Surprisingly, the older son angrily lashed out at the father about how unjust it was that the father rewarded his no-good brother's bad behavior. And here he was, the older son, working hard year after year, and the father never giving him a party, not even a little one. The father begged the older son to join the party and to be happy that his brother had awakened to his true identity. Was the father compassionate with the older son? What do you think? Think about it. Some would say no. You may be saying no. But I think he was compassionate. The younger son had struggled with life's challenges, but he had come to a spiritual realization. He had awakened. The older son was still struggling with his need for recognition and his attachment to material accomplishments. He had not awakened to his divine identity. He was still seeking human approval. The father was celebrating the younger son's spiritual shift, and the father wanted the older son to enjoy his own spiritual shift upward. The father knew that the older son could activate that shift within himself by celebrating his brother. So the father invited the older son to forgive and celebrate his brother's return. The father was compassionate. He did not chastise the older son for his angry outburst. The father's non-judgmental presence supported the older son by encouraging him to overcome his anger, which would have caused the older son to have a transforming spiritual shift toward freedom. Love always does that, doesn't it? Love always transforms us into freedom. Forgiveness would release not only the older son's anger toward his brother, but it would release the noose the older son had placed around his own neck. Because our anger toward another kills us, not the other person. The father knew that once the older son forgave his father, forgave his brother and himself, he could then be able to truly enjoy his father's love. Jesus established this story about the nature of God as being patient, hopeful, loving, forgiving, a parent or a guardian who was willing to meet us more than halfway. He was telling his followers that they could turn to God and receive welcome, love, grace, and blessedness, no matter who they were or what they had done. And so can we. God is love, and God created us out of love. When we have that realization that the younger son did, and we return to God and are welcomed back, we then embody our true nature. The love that we can then feel is God honoring us, giving us authority, and reinstating us as free people. At that moment, when we realize we are truly loved by God, we embrace our true nature, and we can love ourselves and others compassionately. In the prodigal son parable, Jesus showed his followers the characteristics of God and God's relationship with humans. In the second most famous Jesus parable about compassion, Jesus explains how humans can be in relationship with each other. In the Good Samaritan parable, a Jewish man traveling on foot is robbed, beaten, and left for dead. A priest and a Levite, both Jewish temple officials, see the man lying on the road, but pass on the opposite side of the road to maintain their ritual purity under religious law. Touching a dead or bleeding body would have rendered them ritually unclean, preventing them from performing temple duties. They both put their own desires above the dying man's needs. The beaten man continued to lie there near death until a Samaritan, a member of a group despised by Jews, sees the man, feels immense compassion for him, and cares for the man's wounds. He takes the wounded man to an inn and gives the innkeeper money to care for the man until he can return and pay the expenses. This was a pertinent story for Jesus' Jewish followers to hear. For centuries before Jesus, the Jews and Samaritans had been devout enemies. Strong social prejudice, tribal violence, and at one point the Jews destroyed the Samaritans' temple. Samaritans and the Jews considered each other's group disgusting outcasts. For Jesus to tell a story of a compassionate Samaritan helping a Jew when the religious officials would not help the Jew would have been a radical and shocking thing for the Jewish listeners to hear. Jesus challenged his listeners to look past prejudice and racial social divides. The story gives new meaning of who our neighbor really is and promotes inclusion. The moral of the story is that compassion transcends labels, religion, and status. It emphasizes compassion over position. It emphasizes inclusion over exclusion. And it emphasizes inner transformation over tribal prejudices. Through parables, Jesus taught a radical truth. Compassion begins when we stop judging and start understanding and relating compassionately to others. His stories bypass defensiveness and went straight to the heart of the listener. Jesus invited his listeners to see themselves differently and therefore speak and act differently. The prodigal son story describes God's relationship with humans, and the Good Samaritan story describes humans' relationships with each other. Jesus experienced the highest divine consciousness of any human being, as far as we know. Jesus loved God, and Jesus loved himself. That is why he was able to love others, even at times under extreme distress. Jesus forgave his persecutors as they were killing him. Jesus knew that God loved him, and Jesus, being aware that he was one with God, filled him with unlimited love to be able to unconditionally love all human beings. It seems obvious that the Jews lived under strict judgmental religious and societal laws. Jesus was a radical rebel, really radical. He whittled 637 Jewish laws down to two commandments. Boy, talk about a time of, what are they called? Time efficiency experts? Well, here was his commandments. Love God with all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. We all know those. He was defining self-love as an active, selfless love. It wasn't about ego. It was about knowing his oneness with God. He said, the Father and I are one. In that sense, loving himself was inseparable from loving God. Fred Rogers, of Mr. Rogers fame, also a minister, put it like this. You can't really love someone else unless you really love yourself first. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Self-love provides the fuel needed to offer genuine compassion and love to others without becoming emotionally depleted or humanly codependent. This is how Jesus loved himself. See how many of these you practice in your own life. Jesus could receive care from others. He allowed himself to receive care and support. He accepted hospitality, meals, rest, and anointing. He didn't isolate himself in self-sacrifice. He was able to receive love. Number two, Jesus felt his feelings. He honored his emotions instead of suppressing them. He could express his feelings to others in God. He didn't pretend to be unaffected. He felt deeply and expressed it. Number three, Jesus could set emotional and physical boundaries. He walked away from attempts to control or manipulate him. When crowds demanded more healing, he sometimes left anyway. He knew he did not have to meet every demand to be faithful. Number four, Jesus was autonomous and authentic. He didn't have to prove himself or chase after approval. He didn't rely on others' praise. He spoke truth even when it cost him. He didn't shrink himself to be liked or accepted. He refused to perform or prove his identity. He knew he was divine and acted with power. Next number, Jesus lived his purpose. He chose spiritual alignment over human comfort. He remained aligned with truth, even when it brought conflict. He didn't allow urgency to override his purpose. His life reflected integrity between inner knowing and outer action. He completed his mission. He honored the life he was here to live. and less. Jesus understood the power of prayer and meditation. He took time alone to restore himself. He regularly withdrew from crowds to pray. After intense ministry, he stepped away to refill. Before major decisions, he spent the night in prayer. He lived his first commandment, communing with God in prayer and meditation. Do we demonstrate self-love qualities in our lives? Do we love ourselves? Many widely cited studies suggest up to about 85% of people struggle with low self-esteem at some point. I certainly have. That's a lot of people who don't love themselves, 85%. A book by Gay Hendricks entitled The Big Leap states that a way to love yourself is to meditate. We hear every week from the pulpit to create a happy life, we must pray and meditate. Every week we hear this. This message is very stressing to many people. Lots of people believe they cannot meditate because they can't focus for very long. They start meditating, their mind wanders, they get frustrated, they chastise themselves, and then they give up, feeling hopeless. And they say, I can't do it. Well, for all of you who can't focus during prayer or meditation, I have great news for you. Dr. Hendricks says losing focus is an essential part of learning to meditate. You have a little handout in your bulletin, and that goes over some of these steps. The first part of Hendricks' step-by-step program on meditating includes using a simple mantra. A mantra is a sound or a phrase that you can use as a focal point during meditation. You can pick a single word like Om, or a sentence like, I focus my awareness on my breathing. Could be anything. You start this meditation by focusing your attention on the mantra. And then when you lose focus and your attention wanders, you return your attention back to the mantra. This mantra becomes a home base to return to the present moment whenever you notice your mind has taken excursion into the past or the future. People frequently criticize themselves when their mind wanders during the early stages of meditation. But returning a wandering mind to the mantra without judgment and self-criticism, that's the important part, is what hones meditation skills. As your practice matures, you become able to let go of thought wandering and return to the mantra without self-judgment, anger, and hopelessness. Gradually, the habit of self-criticism disappears and is replaced by an open-hearted feeling of self-acceptance and gratitude. The key is to keep doing it and being gentle and open-hearted with yourself, which is an active action of self-love. Many, if not all of us, have been indoctrinated with the belief that we are unworthy, unlovable, a burden, and not good enough. Those beliefs shape our lives, whether we know it or not. Once you get good at focusing during meditation, which is the first step I just explained, and that will take a while, folks, Hendricks offers an effective meditation practice that will help you let go of self-sabotaging beliefs that keep you little and feeling bad about yourself. This success mantra moves you beyond those false beliefs and helps you find your powerful divine self. Sarah, you want to put that up? Here's the success mantra. I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. What I'd like you to do is take a few seconds to say that sentence a few times in your mind. Savor the comprehensive idea that lives within it. Let it resonate in the vast reaches of your consciousness. So why don't you just go ahead and take a few seconds to repeat that sentence a few times to yourself. Now let's say it out loud three times. Listening to the resonance of its truth. Put your fingers on your throat and feel the word's powerful vibrations moving through you as you say this. Let's say it together. I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. Okay, let's say it again. I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. One last time. I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. Thank you. This mantra helps you to expand rather than contract in the areas of abundance, love, and success. Its repetition awakens old conditioning and ancient programming in your psyche that has kept you shackled with feelings of unworthiness, guilt, and shame. Why not just let sleeping dogs lie, you might be thinking? Because it is essential to invite those old negative influencers into the light of day so they can be exposed to the power of light, love, and truth so they can be dispelled. Here are the specifics for freeing yourself of these more demoralizing beliefs. I'll go over the sequence now. In the handout, it explains it in detail, but I'm just going to tell you what it is. During a 5 to 10 minute meditation session, begin by whispering, I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. Pause after you say it and rest with an open mind for 10 to 15 seconds, or two breaths. Whisper the words to yourself again. Pause and rest for 10 to 15 seconds. Continue like this for 5 to 10 minutes. The 10 to 15 second pauses between saying the mantra gives your conscious and unconscious mind time to digest this new powerful affirmation. This time also allows your old limited beliefs to pop up in your head and argue with you about this new truth you're saying to yourself. You may hear things in your head like, he'll never inspire anybody to do anything worthwhile. Don't embarrass yourself or your family. No one would listen to you. Now, if you don't have any of this stuff going on, congratulations. Expect plenty of back-talking and chastising during these 10 to 15 seconds. Those thoughts have a tight grip on you, most of us, and they are going to put up a fight to keep you under control. You are overcoming decades of conditioning, so fight back, not by resisting, but by returning to and believing in the mantra. We've all heard of the golden key, and Fox talks about when you think about something that's unpleasant or worry or anxiety or whatever, as soon as you realize it, come back to God. Think about God. Just keep doing that, golden key. Remember, focus, non-judgment, and self-acceptance are the keys. That's why you learn to focus non-judgmentally in the first place. When you feel that you are in a good spot to end your meditation, rest a minute before returning to your everyday activities. The back talk is a good thing because that means the mantra is working. Recognize those negative beliefs, but don't resist them. Let them there, but focus your mind on the positive affirmation instead. The back talk will stop once the positive message has permeated your conscious and unconscious mind. By doing this meditation practice 5 to 10 minutes a day or longer, twice a day, for however long it takes, this new positive message will take root. Will this empower your error thinking? And will bring abundance, success, and love to you. When you are free of the strangling beliefs of shame, guilt, and judgment, you will feel the benefits of self-love. Myrtle Fillmore was a great example for this technique. For 2 years, she kept affirming her divine right to health until her truth statement filled her conscious and unconscious mind completely, and she was healed. So it's usually not an overnight thing. I started this talk with the statement, there is a presence within us that knows how to speak with kindness, to listen with love, and to respond with wisdom. When we love God, love others, and love ourselves, as Jesus taught and demonstrated, we will hear that still small voice within us, giving us guidance, telling us the words to say, and the actions to do to love ourselves and others. As we get good at following good, orderly direction, which is an acronym for God, G-O-D, good, orderly direction, we will shift in consciousness, know the truth, and with a heart of gratitude, we will promote love, compassion, peace, and joy, and live a fulfilling, purposeful life. Love and compassionate communication with others will bring peace to ourselves, to our relationships, and to the world. So let's move into meditation by reciting the prayer that Jesus Christ taught the world. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever. Amen. So let's move into a time of meditation and prayer now. So get comfortable. Let your body settle. Allow your shoulders to soften. Gently close your eyes if you wish. Take a slow, easy breath in and release. Again, breathe in peace and breathe out any tension. Bring your awareness to your heart, the quiet, sacred center within you. Here, there is a presence, a stillness, a love that does not judge, does not rush, does not react to fear. This is the Christ presence within, the voice of compassion. Compassion flows from a loving heart. Silently affirm within, I am a vessel of divine love. I listen with an open heart. I speak with kindness and clarity. Now imagine a recent conversation, or perhaps one that is yet to come. See yourself there, but this time you are centered. Calm, grounded, present. You are not reacting. You are responding. You are listening, not just to words, but to the heart behind the words. And as you speak, your words are gentle, honest, healing. there is anyone in your life who feels difficult or challenging to communicate with, gently bring them into your awareness now. Surround them in light, not to change them, but to free your own heart. Now silently bless them with these words. The love of God flows between us. Peace fills this connection. I release all judgment and I choose compassion. Take a few moments just to sit in this feeling of love and peace and freedom. Know this truth. You carry this presence with you into every conversation, into every moment. Compassion is not something we try to do. It is who we are. And as children of a loving universe, we choose love. And so it is.